April 12th, 2016. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasenflug.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, I tell you what, I love sitting at home and watching the snowfall in the spring.
Well, in between the snowfall, the sun came out.
The sun, the snow. It is the most ridiculous thought process. Whoever's in charge, I think it's Tom Skilling. I think Tom Skilling needs to straighten this stuff out.
I walk the dog and it's warm, it's sunny, it's beautiful. I come in from walking the dog, and I am not kidding you. You're talking about pancake size snowflakes falling down, just the whole lawn is white again. And you're going, how did that happen? We turn around, it melts, the sun comes back up, and then, you know, an hour later, the snow starts coming down again. What a crazy spring.
It has been a crazy spring, and hopefully by next weekend, the weather will normalize and it'll be springtime. But for right now, we can stay inside, we can watch all sorts of fun things. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And speaking of fun things...
What came out Tuesday?
The DVD of The Force Awakens came out last Tuesday. I've watched it twice in
the last seven days.
Yes, I have.
But you didn't watch it alone, did you?
That's right, because Sphero, my BB-8 companion, they updated the software on the droid version of the Sphero, the BB-8, and you can now sit and watch the movie, and the robot can watch it with you.
And it becomes your friend.
It's my friend that watches the movies with me.
So here's a question. Since you've seen it four times?
I've now seen it a total of four times.
All right. So has the movie, is it still as fresh?
Yes.
It is.
I'm still going to watch it another time, probably this week. I'm probably going to absolutely then think about maybe putting it on the shelf until Christmas time, when I will put it into my rotation of the other three Star Wars movies. We'll watch four Star Wars movies on Christmas Day.
Now, are you catching new things as part of it?
Very interesting. I got the Blu-ray, DVD, and digital copy. I took the DVD and put it into my minivan. Oh boy, the Steve-mobile. And I was listening to it while I was driving, and I can experience this movie in a different way. I can just be listening and not seeing the visuals. And I heard things differently than when I was watching it.
Can you give me an example?
There's this moment when Kylo Ren first lands on Jakku in the very beginning, when Poe Dameron is taken by Kylo Ren. Those of you who don't know Star Wars, I've just given you a bunch of names of aliens. Just go with it. There's a moment when the ships are coming, and I swear somebody shouts, and I swear what they shout is the language of the people in the Indiana Jones Raiders of the Lost Ark. I don't know for sure, but I think it might be an Easter egg. Maybe not.
A connection somewhere.
There is definitely a connection between Star Wars and Indiana Jones. We heard that the fifth Indiana Jones movie is coming out, and Harrison Ford, in his 80s, is going to be Indiana Jones for a fifth time.
Excellent.
So we've got that.
We named the dog Indy.
That's right. The other thing I've been watching, I've been using my Oculus VR headset, and I got into the Hulu app, and on the Hulu app, they gave me a free preview of Andrew Dice Clay's new sitcom.
All right, so for those who are not familiar with the Oculus,
okay,
that is, you put it over your eyes,
uh-huh,
and so you're looking at, you're virtually looking at a theater screen, and this is how you watched it.
And this is Hulu, the Hulu app, and in the Hulu app, they've given you a free first episode of the Showtime series from Andrew Dice Clay.
And you can do your favorite Andrew Dice Clay clips. So he is still this character that he created back in the 80s.
Yeah, he is still Andrew Dice Clay. He's still going through situations, and the situations are very silly. It's a sitcom. It's not autobiographical, but it kind of is. It is the autobiography of this character having these situations.
And Andrew Dice Clay is a character for this gentleman to play.
Right. Andrew is one guy, and Dice is another guy.
Hey!
I wish I could do any of his shtick on this show, but just trust me, go to YouTube and look up Andrew Dice Clay. You will be entertained. You and I have finished our run through 11/22/63 on Hulu.
I did. I sat down with my wife. We finished it up. What I will say about this is I really wish they would have released it all together.
I agree.
Like Netflix. Because we had to wait a week in between shows, in my opinion, it kind of lost some of its momentum. And also, I didn't like how they had to dedicate each show to a specific sort of study of the book.
They felt that they had to do that, we think, as viewers. And I agree with you. I think that they could have let that story ride for more than just the 1 hour of the episode.
So since all 9 hours have been released, there's 8 shows. The first one is 2 hours. If you're going to watch it, you know, binge watching it seems pretty reasonable. I'm not saying you have to watch all the hours at once, but what I'm suggesting is watching a show or two at a time.
Even 1.5 has worked out really well for me, okay. Where a 90-minute block of time worked really well for my viewing habits.
I did like this. I wouldn't say that it was on the level of Netflix on many of the things that they released, but I didn't, you know, I don't think this is bad. They casted this thing real well. There's a great cast as part of it, and a good show. I mean, I would say it was worthy of my time. And first of all, we both liked the book too.
I liked the book so much. I did like this series very much. The one thing I would have done differently is I would have looked at the world of the 60s more. Mm-hmm. They really ignore the fact that this guy is time traveling and he's in the 1960s. There's cars and there's hats.
You get a little touch of it, but you
not
certainly
as much as I wanted.
And especially if you were a younger person who was not as familiar with this era. This wasn't our youth. This was the past for us.
Right.
But this may have been our parents' youth.
And it was definitely Stephen King's youth.
Absolutely.
So he was able to articulate that in his writing, and I think they missed a piece of that in the filming.
And thinking about that, John F. Kennedy, I don't know if a person who was not familiar with that era maybe would have recognized how unique and special person he was for that era. Maybe Reagan was that dominant person for our youth, but for, you know, Stephen King's youth, it was John F. Kennedy.
The other one you got to go see is Hardcore Henry. We talked about this last week. This is a video game turned into a movie, but there was never a video game. This is a live action first-person video game you got to sit through.
Yes, it is. And this was a very interesting movie. I saw it in 3D. If you were going to see this movie, I don't suggest seeing it 3D. It didn't really have anything that required it.
A lot of movies that add 3D don't really need to add 3D. It's just one more way to get people into the theaters.
This movie plays very much like a video game would play, or what I remember playing video games, first-person shooter would. You tend to kind of move from level to level, like you complete one mini story, then you go to the next mini story, then you go to the next mini story, and then eventually you get to the end and it looks so overwhelming that, you know, how could you do it? And then you have to defeat it and you finish the movie. One criticism I would have with this movie is the beginning story. So when you're aware that you are Hardcore Henry, and the ending, they don't align. Once you kind of look at them, you go, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't mean you won't enjoy this film. You absolutely will enjoy this film if you like video games. And I think that's the market for this. This was a very capable film, very Russian. I mean, I think there was a Russian director maybe to it. I enjoyed it. I don't think it's for everybody.
Mostly for the teenagers and the video gamers. You said that the trailers for this had a lot of movies that were not of interest to you.
Sure, there was a lot of, and that was the bumpers before we watched the film. A lot of horror films and things of that nature. And we got down, I think the last one was The Purge that comes out, maybe July 4th weekend. Once again, those were not the movies that I would be interested in, but maybe the people who saw Hardcore Henry are. There's a lot of violence in this film. I need to be very clear on that. This is all like computer game violence, which I guess could impact you, but you never really think of it as real. You think of it as just, this is not a real event going on. You're going from one situation to another. There's brief nudity in it because you're part of the game. The movie takes place going through a like a brothel or something like that.
The other movie that you saw was called Life, and this is the story of the Life magazine photo shoots of James Dean.
Yes, and this is a movie that I was really looking forward to see. Netflix sent it to me, got the Blu-ray in the mail. This came out fall of last year, and this the preview looks like a great film. This is a very slow film.
Okay.
And James Dean, I guess he may have had an odd accent when he was speaking, but it was definitely very there. My wife got very bored with this. I had some interest in watching it because James Dean is a very fascinating character. This movie takes place when East of Eden was getting ready to be released. So it's sort of the week or month before the movie, and James Dean is supposed to be doing promotional things, and he totally blows it off. That was one of probably his biggest weaknesses. He wanted to be so much of an artist that he failed to recognize that part of being an artist is you've got to have the promotion. The other story underneath it is he was up for Rebel Without a Cause, which he eventually got in real life, and they eventually show that, but he is trying his best to be the actor that they choose. And then tragically, I think maybe 7 weeks or after Rebel Without a Cause was put out, I'm going from memory, he passed away tragically. Natalie Wood was in East of Eden too, and she passed away also. So this is a look at that period of time, I guess 11, 22, 63, and this kind of touch each other real well.
Mm-hmm. The other one that you watched is called Requiem for the American Dream. Tell us all about this one.
All right, so this is an interview, or one of the last interviews with Noam Chomsky, and he is one of the leading left thinkers of our time, and that's at least how they portray him. It's a fascinating story. You can definitely think when watching it, he's a very deep person. He's thought about it. I had trouble with this. Part of this movie, I'm listening to him. I'm going, yeah, that sounds, you know, exactly. And then part of it, I'm going, this is certainly not reflective. One of the stories that he is trying to tell is that today's generation or our future generation may not have a good life or may not be as good as today's life.
Something we've been saying for a few years now.
Well, I have a hard time with that because you just got back from Graceland. And you got to see Elvis Presley's home.
Is it?
All right, so Elvis Presley home, compare that to your home today. What do you think?
And that was one of the big takeaways that we had from Graceland, is Graceland is, in our imagination, this enormous mansion of a home. And when we look at its size and its style versus the size and style of our homes here in the suburbs of Chicago, it's not that much different. Graceland is a magnificent home, and so is ours.
Well, in 40 years, what was available to a very wealthy person, who were one of the wealthiest people at the time, I would say, an entertainer who's choosing probably all the latest stuff, and what we have today, I would say that we're middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would say maybe, extravagant middle class. On the world level, I guess we're wealthy, but for the most part, you know, we have a couple bathrooms and we have a nice kitchen and we have a television and, you know, you don't have a pool and I don't either, but Graceland has a pool.
A small one.
And it certainly wouldn't be, it would be something that I guess if you valued having a pool, you could get one.
Mm-hmm.
Wealth is a little bit different today than what it was in the past. And I think one of the things that may be missing, and certainly this is a thinker, and we're just regular people, I would say. Maybe who
I do some thinking.
We do some thinking. What I would say one of the challenges is that, you know, Europe, if we think about the time that he was growing up, Europe had just been destroyed from World War II. I mean, one of the reasons America could have risen as quickly as it did is, you know, one, we have a very free society, and we allow innovation to take hold. But the other part is the other part of our free society, Europe, had been destroyed by war.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily take the pessimistic side that he has. But what I would say is that this was an interesting film. If you have interest in listening to what one of the leading thinkers of our time, and you know, and the twilight of his public appearances, this would be a good one to look at.
All right, that one's called Requiem for the American Dream, and sounds like a thinking man's movie.
It definitely is.
Brings us to some of the movies that are coming out this week. The first one is The Jungle Book. Disney has been taking some of those classic animated films from the 1950s and 1960s and making them into live action versions. This is our live action Jungle Book. I'm looking forward to this one.
And so, can you clarify, is this going to be a retelling of the Disney Jungle Book or the retelling of...
This is not the Rudyard Kipling Jungle Book. This is the Disney Jungle Book. Okay. And the very interesting story there is Walt Disney himself, he was very hands-on with the animation of The Jungle Book in the late 1960s, and he went to his writers and asked them if they had read the Rudyard Kipling Jungle Book, and if they had not, he told them, don't. The Disneyification of this story is now classic. Disney does this, has done this for 40 years, taking a classic story and making it a Disney story instead of that original. This is the Disney Jungle Book done with live action people and artificial animals, and I'm really excited to see what's going to come of this.
And Bill Murray.
And Bill Murray.
He's going to play the big bear.
There you go. I'm right there. Did you ever watch the live action Yogi Bear with Dan Aykroyd playing Yogi Bear?
No.
And Justin Timberlake as Boo Boo?
No.
Oh, that was a great movie.
You said great.
I loved it. I watched it like six times.
Six? Oh, my goodness. Hey, Boo. You just said great movie.
Hey, Boo.
But Yogi.
Rangers are... The picnic baskets. The Jungle Book's one of my favorites. I love the music from the 1967 one. I mean, it was all about music. It was all about those guys and what they could do. And I'm hoping that this is going to be something.
Like the Aristocats, this was, the Jungle Book was an exploration of jazz. So how wonderful is that?
I don't know what to expect from this one. I haven't been really looking into it too deeply because I don't want to be disappointed. I was pleased with the live action Cinderella that came out a year or so ago, directed by Kenneth Branagh. So okay,
but Maleficent was the year before the Sleeping Beauty. So, and both of those were very capable. And what I will say is that while the animation may remain as classics, these are very good films, but I don't know if I'm going, they're not repeat watching for me. But for a young person, maybe they become their animation, the equivalent of it.
And if the music kicks in the way it did for that 1967 Jungle Book, I will own this soundtrack. The other movie that's coming out this week is called The First Monday in May. This one is a very interesting look behind the scenes of a huge presentation at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Yes, and this is a sort of a gala that they would have. This is going to have a limited run, so I don't know where it will be showing. This is about the preparations for of using us. It's about fashion designers. This is definitely the product of a wealthy society that could allow these types of events to happen. This is about how they put it on and interviewing the people who do it. So we don't always get... interviews with these types of creative groups of people. That's the reason why I think this is of interest.
I just love watching people putting on huge productions. I put on such big productions, and I exhaust myself so much doing these things. I like seeing how people get these huge productions done so that I can maybe do my job better.
And this is where they take the entire Metropolitan Museum of Art and they create the whole thing through the entire museum.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Enormous. Brings us to our appetite or app of the week and Reddit this week. Do you read Reddit?
I do read Reddit.
Reddit is a great source of information. If you want to know what's happening in the world, Reddit is one of the easy access places to find information.
Reddit allows individuals to post things of interest. So you want an odd article or you want something on a specific subject, anything from world news to games to...
I get a lot of tech news from
sports,
there, obviously.
Sure.
There's sports on Reddit?
There's all sorts. You have an interest, there is something in there.
Okay. Reddit this week has put out their first mobile app so that you can have access to that information on the mobile platform. The mobile platform has just taken off in the last 5 years. There's no doubt
that
has changed the way we get our information. And there's lots of third-party apps that read Reddit and allow you to do that on the mobile phone. But Reddit has put out theirs this week.
And this is something that's happening across the board, not just with Reddit, but from any type of service out there.
Twitter and Facebook very famously have shut down third-party access to their data so that you have to, as a user, go through their app because they want to see your eyeballs so that they can sell it to advertisers.
And that's part of how they're paying for these services.
Right.
Once again, since they're free, you're the product. Mm-hmm. And if you want to use those services, they've got to figure out a way to monetize. Newspapers and things like that are also having the those same challenges.
Yeah, Reddit is kind of the same thing as a newspaper. It is that taking the mass of information and putting it into a funnel so you get the piece that you want.
Sure, sure.
It's a great way to do it. So we do recommend that. The other app that I do want to mention this week is Waze. We've talked about Waze 6 times in the last 2 years.
W-A-Z-E.
W-A-Z-E.
And if you are traveling and you have a smartphone, you probably want to use Waze.
I use Waze every trip, every day. Even if I'm just going from here to work, every day I use Waze.
Well, that's the reason why we have those computers in our pockets.
Amazing.
Make them useful.
Now it's even more useful. This week, Waze added, they finally can tell me what the speed limit is on the road that I'm traveling on. And secondly, it can give me a warning if I'm exceeding that speed limit, and it can give me a red block on my screen or an audible signal to tell me that I'm exceeding the speed limit.
So in the past, if you had a Magellan or a Garmin or a TomTom, which were the separate services, they would give you that information.
That information was on there. This was, I'm talking about 10, 15 years ago. That information was there. It's pretty easy to find and to put into your program what the speed limit is. It was very frustrating to me that Waze hadn't put that in. But this week, they've solved that problem.
Excellent. Excellent.
Brings us to our book of the week. And you've been reading, you love comic books.
Well, and I have a history of reading them. I don't read as much as I used to, but I still like revisiting. It's a good place to kind of go back and re-enjoy the youth.
So you read a really interesting behind-the-scenes look at comic books. This one's called Super Gods, What Masked Vigilantes, Miraculous Mutants, and a Sun God from Smallville Can Teach Us About Being Human. This is by Grant Morrison.
This book was released in 2011. I've had it on my Kindle, I don't know, 3 or 4 years? I mean, so it's been there.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a conference and I read the Marvel book about the history of Marvel comics during that time. So I think I bought it right after that, and it just basically sat there. I finally decided to bang it out. It took me a while. My goodness, it took... Reading big books takes time.
That's right.
This is an interesting, interesting book. Grant Morrison right now is probably the hottest comic book writer out there.
Wow.
So for my age, it was probably Alan Moore. And, you know, for the people in the 60s, it was Stan Lee. So to give you on that level, the person right now is Grant Morrison.
Wow.
Grant Morrison, we get his history. So from birth all the way up to today, we get to learn a little bit about he's got a Scottish accent.
Yes, he does. A very thick Scottish accent.
In the book, he tells you when he shaves his head, he used to have long hair. And it sounds like that he got self-conscious one day because he thought he was going to lose it and just shaved it off. And we also learn about his family. And as a young kid, his father protested a lot. So Grant was grabbed and taken off to these type of events. And obviously it shaped part of his youth on how to look at things. As a young boy, he was a very bright person who liked to read. Comics were part of that reading material. And he liked the optimism and sort of what they were able to bring to the table. Eventually, he decided he was going to write. The second part of this movie is you get a history of the comic book industry. And we're talking about going back in the 30s with Siegel and Shuster bringing Superman in, all the way up through the Marvel age with Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, through the 70s, where things became very corporate, to the explosion of where we went from people doing a job writing this stuff to really those fans becoming the writers and the artists during the 80s. And creating sort of the deconstructing the characters that we got in Watchmen, which was a book. And if you saw Batman and Superman, this dark way of looking at these grim characters.
Do you bleed?
Do you bleed? We get the 90s, where we get the rise of a comic book company called Image, where basically all the high talent left the big DC and Marvel and created their own company and their own characters. They became very, very wealthy and then eventually kind of collapsed on themselves because they couldn't get material out. We also are going to get his, he basically writes these characters, what he thinks these characters are. So you get Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, and then you get some of the Marvel characters where he kind of writes his own, this is who I think these characters are and why they're special. And then finally, he kind of wraps it in a bow and what he thinks his era is bringing to the table. So right now, we talked about last week, I think The Killing Joke was getting ready to come out into it's a Batman story, coming out into a DC cartoon movie.
I'm so excited about that because that features the voices of the Batman the Animated Series, Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy, and that's going to be an interesting event.
Well, in fact, that story that was based upon is from a comic book back in the late 80s,
right?
That basically... didn't Jim Gordon got raped in it? We also have Barbara Gordon, who is the Batgirl. She was crippled in it. And then it is just a crazy, crazy story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is a dark, dark story. Once you've taken that, and that if that defined that era, and we are receiving the movies from people who were inspired by Watchmen and Frank Miller's The Dark Knight, we get to Grant Morrison's view of these, and he said, listen, these are super beings, and if you're Superman, you shouldn't feel the weight of the world on you all the time. You should be very relaxed, and because you can do everything, because Superman can do everything, why can't you be optimistic about doing everything? And that is ultimately what we get is a switch. And my assumption is, since comics work about 20 to 30 years before that things start showing up in movies and stuff like that, my hope is that we do get some of this optimism kind of shining through. I really recommend this book for people. They want to learn a little bit about the history of these characters, have interest in maybe where things will be in the next 10, 15 years in movies, because... like I said, movies and music and things like that tend to grasp hold of subjects that eventually will show up. For those who want to know where maybe movies will be going and they want a taste of that, ultimately, I think what comes out of this was All-Star Superman. And you can look that up on Amazon or Kindle or anything you want at Comixology, and you can pick that up. You can see his thoughts on what a Superman character could be. And a story that, as he would look at it, there is some optimism in it and a little more mature when compared to the stories of the 40s and 50s and 60s look at things. Recommended? I liked it.
Very good. That's Super Gods and by Grant Morrison. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com. Brings us to our Now the News. And I'm smiling again, Chip.
You are smiling.
The teaser trailer for Rogue One, a Star Wars story, dropped this week.
And that was a very, very good teaser, wasn't it?
It was a very good teaser. I'm very excited about Star Wars, as I'm always excited about Star Wars. But mm-hmm. This particular story, the story of the ragtag team of rebels who stole the Death Star plans and got them to Princess Leia, who was trying desperately to get them to her father, King Organa, and put them into the R2 unit. This is the story that hasn't been told yet. I'm excited.
Well, as we were preparing for this show, we had a conversation beforehand. I think you hit upon something, that if Star Star Wars was a fantasy.
A space fantasy.
What is this movie?
This could be our sci-fi Star Wars.
I think so, too.
I think that would be a really interesting way to play this. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know what exactly this movie is going to be, but based on the teaser trailer, we might see some science fiction action to these movies that are the talk to the episodes 7, 8, and 9 that are the tick every other year.
Well, in fact, I think you may have really had some good insight here. If we look at the Star Wars 7 and the 8 that's coming out, that's for the general population and, you know, kind of to move the story forward. When we start looking at these in-between stories that have a little more detail and stuff like that, maybe it's for a little more mature, kind of a wink or a nod to the guys who, or the people who grew up with Star Wars, who are the ultimate fans.
And ultimately to those fans who used to read all those novels. Mm-hmm. All those Star Wars novels that when Disney took over Star Wars, they retconned all of that stuff.
Sure.
Now we get to tell those stories in a different way, in a Disneyfied way. Facebook is wanting you to tell your stories, and this week they have rolled out their live video streaming to all users, so you can get on and make your own video and show it to the world on Facebook.
Well, if we've used Periscope here.
Mm-hmm. We've also used Meerkat.
Okay, so Meerkat and Periscope. So this is Facebook's version of that. Mm-hmm. So you could live broadcast through it. And you're probably saying, well, why would we do it through Facebook versus doing it through Periscope or Meerkat?
Facebook wants to be the white pages. They want to be the way that we communicate with our group of friends and with our extended group of people that we want to communicate with. They want Messenger to be your way to communicate and this to be your video.
Well, in Messenger, there was just recently a piece that came up on the adoption of Messenger. And Messenger has added 100 million users in 3 months. So they went from 800 million to 900 million users in 3 months.
That's staggering.
And so when you realize that, if you want to get in contact with someone, this really could be the new type of white pages.
Even a stranger, because we met somebody at a wedding weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Where did I go to find that person's contact information afterwards? I went straight to Facebook. I saw that she was a friend of the bride, and so I could find her name, and I contacted her through Facebook Messenger.
And that is the maybe the preferred way of emailing someone.
Yeah.
Because it is...
Email is dead. Email, there's a problem with email, and it needs to be solved, and Facebook might be one of the solutions.
It may be.
Reminders are now available on the web version of Google Calendar. Do you use Google Calendar?
I use Google Calendar. Now, I use the iPhone, and you use an Android phone.
That's right.
And we both use Google Documents prepare for this.
That's right.
We use Google Calendar. We use Gmail.
This is why I switched to the Android phone. I was an iPhone user, and I realized how much of the Google ecosystem I'm using on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And so because I use so much of the Google ecosystem, I switched to a Google phone. Reminders is a great service. I use it all the time, adding a to-do list to my day, especially because I have my smartwatch that's also a Google smartwatch. But now that it comes up on the web, I have on every part of my service all of that information.
And as you complete tasks, you can just basically mark them off.
And if you don't complete them, they roll over to the next day until you mark them off. It's a great way to do it.
I look forward to it. I'm glad this has been added to the services. And like I said, I just pull it through my iPhone, which is, like I said, just a different way of doing the same thing you're doing.
Absolutely. NASA's new sea level site puts climate change papers and tools online. We've been talking about climate change for a very long time. There's a lot of people who disagree with the idea because they don't have all the information. NASA has a lot of information, and they're putting it online for us.
And that's the beautiful part of this. So, you know, going through news, a lot of times you're getting information, or you may be getting disinformation, and the ability to go directly to the source and to be able to use those tools, you can come to your own conclusion there. And I think that's a really kind of a wonderful service that NASA has basically said, hey, you want all the papers, you want all the tools, go do your own research.
And make your own decisions, because there's so much to the data about climate that...
It is. There's a philosophy that you have to come to terms with. And then there's also the data that are they collecting? How long did they collect it? How are you going to use that to help make a decision?
Speaking of getting data, you know, Google's good at getting our data. I'm really good at giving them my data. But one thing that they are shutting down is the Nest service. The piece of the Nest service called the Revolve Smart Home system is being shut down.
All right. So we're not talking about the thermostats right now.
Right.
We're not talking about the smoke detectors right now.
Right.
We're talking about the thing that would connect the Internet of Things to a hub.
Right.
It's called Revolve.
And it's being shut down in May.
And they sent out a note that it's going to be shut down. If you go to the website, you can read all about it. So at that point, that service is no longer viable. That's one of the risks of adopting early technology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm a person who has a Nest thermostat in my home.
And I have Nest fire detectors in my home.
So, and when we bought them, they were the thermostat is $250.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it automatically adjusts your temperature, learns about how you use your home. And the idea is it'll turn it off and on so that when they suspect you're there, everything is nice, warm, and toasty or cool, just the way you like it. And then when you're not there, it basically the service conserves electricity.
To save you money, hopefully.
Over time. Mm-hmm. Over time. Now, your service is the smoke alarm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those were $100 each.
Right.
And you have how many?
I have two of them, one on each floor.
One on each floor. But how many smoke detectors do you have in your house?
There's a good dozen smoke detectors throughout the house, and I'm not willing to pay $100 for each one of those dozen.
So if you would have put them in every room in your home, it would have been $1,200.
Right.
And the reason why you would have wanted to do that ideally is because they all talk to each other.
Correct.
And that's the reason you should replace your smoke detectors. I think it's every 5 years.
Something like that.
And that means like really replacing them, not just putting a battery in them.
Right.
So I just recently did mine and I looked at the Nest and I said, I'm not putting $1,200 for this. So I ended up using, I think they're three for $100. I can't remember what the company is, but they all talk to each other. And that's what I did not do is what you decided to do is put two Nest in, because if I would have put the Nest in, they don't talk to the other ones.
Right.
These are forward-thinking technologies that we're using.
And becoming dependent upon. And that's where this story really is Google is famous for pulling things that are not being profitable for the company. This Revolve smart home system was not profitable, so they are no longer going to support it.
Well, it's also very difficult. And I think that's what's driving up the cost. There was an engineer that had a leak on Reddit this week that actually was talking about this. They basically said that, well, in the post, he said they have a $500 million budget and they're only bringing in $340 million in revenue. So they're $160 million short. And what he was suggesting is that the engineers are put under a tremendous amount of pressure, but they also had their other service that was brought in called Dropcam. That was something that you didn't add and I didn't add. I didn't really have an interest. Basically, Dropcam is a Nest service that allows you to have cameras in your house.
Security cameras in your house so that you can monitor when you're away from your Nest and see what's happening inside your home. There's a lot of interesting stories about catching burglars using a system like this, but I don't see any need for it.
No, I don't have a need for it either. It's interesting that they were working on all four of these things at the same time, where, in my opinion, the thermostat worked real well. And the idea, in my opinion, would have been to expand it, try to get more adoption of using this, because ComEd, which is our service here, wants me to have a smart to basically connect to their smart grid.
Mm-hmm.
And with more adoption, the price could drop. Because $250, when we're comparing it to something you probably could get for $25-$50 with one that is not a smart thermostat, seems to not make any sense. I mean, that's a pretty high barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm comparing $50 to $75 or to $100, well, maybe I make that knowing I can make money over time. Well, anyway, I'm sorry to see this is happening. I, as a Nest thermostat user, hope they continue to make that Nest thermostat.
And continue
and support it.
Yeah, continue to support it is way more important because you are at their mercy for a lot of this, and hopefully it'll be right.
And that's the challenge with taking stuff on the startup. This originally started Nest with a couple of guys who had worked on the iPhone, had left Apple, and they started this company.
That's right. Data from the New York City Taxi and Limousine Commission is showing an interesting pattern with the growth of Uber and the decline of the use of taxis in New York City.
And this is really interesting that this data gets released. And by the way, the gentleman who's collecting is Todd Snyder, and we got it off of his website. This is public data that basically is showing the decline. It's 60,000 users of the New York City taxi service. And then we had a rise of 70,000 with using Uber and Lyft, and the majority of those are Uber.
Mm-hmm.
So Lyft is actually having a hard time finding their audience. Uber has become the default user, and my guess is it's going to be the young people and people who are technology are accepting of enough technology that they'd be willing to use an Uber driver.
Yeah, we'll see how this plays out because the rise of Uber has been stellar, and the decline in taxi usage is mirroring that. And there's a lot of things that are going to change in the next 5-10 years.
Well, you can see how technology can become an incredible disruptor to a market and to false markets. And you know, with the medallion system that the taxi system has used, it basically created a false market. And in fact, taxi drivers failed to evolve and add technology to their service. They have since added a technology service to that, and they may be able to regain their status as the premier way of traveling. But Uber right now seems to there's a low barrier to entry as far as you have to go through a background check. But there's a low, if you want to be a driver, you can be a driver, and you can drive for the period of time that you want to. For the people who use Uber, it seems to work faster and more convenient and all the fun things that you'd want with a service.
Speaking of faster and more convenient, we talked a few weeks ago about the National Football League finding a streaming company to show their football games next season. They entered into a contract with Twitter to show...
How interesting.
...to show 10 Thursday night football games on the streaming side.
Well, Twitter, for most smartphones... Twitter is one of those apps that you pull up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also thinking, and so then when we look at things like the Roku, Apple TV, and Fire TV, where the apps are available, but most of the time we don't download them.
I wouldn't think that installing Twitter on my TV would be a good idea.
Well, it looks like we're going to do it now. If you want to stream NFL games, there's going to be no cost to this?
No cost and no authentication. It's just going to be there. They're just going to take the feed directly from CBS or NBC, whichever station is broadcasting it, and they're just going to feed it through Twitter.
This is going to be interesting to see the number of people who choose to watch it this way.
Mm-hmm. Has been for a few years.
Mm-hmm. Streaming versus cable or over-the-air television. This it's going to be interesting to see where we get the market or the growth. If you're a young person, you know, you may not never have a cable service as we traditionally know it.
Yeah, I'm not technically a cord never. I did have cable for a few years, really spottily between my college years and now,
mm-hmm.
but I don't have cable now. I don't want cable. I don't see the benefit of that $100 a month on that. And now with Thursday Night Football coming through my Twitter feed, I even better.
Well, my hope is that the advertisers get what they want from this to be able to pay to be able to show that we can actually have these types of services streaming. Because I prefer, right now, I would prefer to go ahead and get rid of my cable bill, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why spend so much when you could get similar services as basically data?
Yeah, get what you want at the price that you want. Speaking of which, oh gosh, here we go again. There's another cartoon.
Netflix is your buddy, right?
Netflix is my new buddy. I have been watching Netflix for a while now, and now I'm watching it even more because all 99 episodes of the 1990s cartoon, The Animaniacs, are now on Netflix.
All right, so Animaniacs, I was in college when this came out.
So was I.
And you said that your dorm room, they all watched it.
My circle of friends, we scheduled our classes around the Animaniacs. This was our community viewing for our college years. For my mother, it was Star Trek. She got together with all the people in that community, and they sat around and watched Star Trek.
For my mother, it was Star Trek too. For my dorm, it was ALF for some reason.
That's a very strange one.
Well, I don't know why, but it seemed like it must have just come out at the right time, yep. Or came out at the right time, and we must have gotten back to the dorm room at reasonable amount of time. I would say we probably had about 20 of us watching ALF and kind of laughing at it.
Our Animaniacs, that is our special thing that we talk about when we get together 20 years later. It's kind of a fun cartoon. It is that bridge between the old Warner Brothers Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck cartoons. It has that same sensibility, and it adds the new sensibility of the 90s culture. Not exactly a Ren and Stimpy, but certainly on that same line.
And this was put together, or at least headed by Steven Spielberg.
That's right. He was the executive producer.
So, I mean, there was obviously a lot of big money behind it. Mm-hmm. And they had things like Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah, Pinky and the Brain came out of the Animaniacs, too. Yeah.
Yes, and that was Orson Welles, and who was the other?
Right. It's not really Orson Welles. He did a great Orson Welles impression, including that famous outtake of Orson Welles doing a speaking role where he would not say it that way, just like the William Shatner,
sure.
I will not say sabotage. The Orson Welles, they redid that with Pinky instead of Orson Welles, and it's hilarious.
Do they have lots of Gallo wine? There is no wine before it's time.
I don't remember that part of my childhood.
Did you drink lots of Gallo wine while watching the Animaniacs?
No, that was not a part of our college experience.
That honestly, was part of my ALF experience.
Maybe that's why ALF was good for you. I don't know, Chip. I think that's enough information. I think we can go sit and watch the Animaniacs. I bet you I can find ALF somewhere on there for you, too.
I don't think I need to watch ALF anymore. But anyway, only if we can come back next week.
I think we have enough information to survive another week. If you need more information, you can get in touch with us. Get to our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. Send us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, News.TooMuchScrolling.com. Find more information, because that's what we love. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflug.
We'll see you in the future.